Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Uncommon Ground with Van Jones ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Is this America, the land of the free and the home of the brave?
Wake up, America! Wake up!
The political division in the country undeniably deep right now.
The big question on a lot of people's minds, can Americans come together and heal?
Because it's not a matter of my liberation. It is also a matter of yours. If you're working, if we're working together, it's not because we're going to do something for the poor black people. We're going to do something for each other to save this really rather frightening world.
Whatever our differences, we are fellow Americans. And please believe me when I say, no association has ever meant more to me than that.
I'm Van Jones, and this is Uncommon Ground. I grew up in a small town in Jackson, Tennessee, and when I grew up, it was totally normal for people to have friends who were politically different from them. My best friend in high school was a guy named Kenny Hartley, white guy, conservative guy, loved Ronald Reagan. I hated Ronald Reagan. And, you know, we just would debate and argue all the time, but we were friends. We were such good friends because we both cared about politics. And just the fact that we were two high school kids who cared about politics, that was more important to us than, you know, that one guy loved Jesse Jackson, the other guy loved Ronald Reagan. I miss that. I really miss that. I miss that feeling that you could debate and disagree without distrusting and without disrespecting, and that we could talk to each other and not just about each other. And part of the point of the Uncommon Ground podcast is we really want to bring that back. And I'm happy that we have a chance to do that on this episode because I still have friends who vote differently and think differently than I do. And one of those friends is Meghan McCain. Now, Meghan McCain doesn't need any introduction. You know, she's from a globally famous family, multiple generations of public service. But, you know, she's somebody who I have found, once we get away from the TV cameras, once we get away from the spotlight, once we get away from all the public controversy, is just one of the most solid, loyal friends you're ever going to have. And we found a way to stay in each other's lives, despite the fact that we're not in the same political party. And, you know, you probably have some people in your life like that as well. I hope you do. You know, so many of us, you know, we've just lost so many friends and family members to politics. You got people you went to high school with, you just have to block them on your Facebook page because the stuff they're posting just gets you so upset you can't handle it. But I still hope that you have a few people in your life who you've been able to stay close to. And I want you to have some insight into how Meghan and I do our friendship. She's an author. She's a columnist. She was on The View from 2017 to 2021, one of the biggest, you know, shows on television. She was sometimes the lone conservative voice during that whole period. So, you know, she was really a part of shaping the national conversation during a time when the national conversation was highly consequential, the Trump years. You know, through that time, she became a mom, all this stuff, and took a lot of heat from the left and the right. And I took a lot of heat from the left and the right as well during that time. So we wound up becoming good friends. And I want to bring you into that relationship a little bit, pull the curtains back a little bit, and bring you into how Meghan McCain and I do our friendship, hopefully to inspire you and encourage you to do friendship yourself across whatever lines exist in your world.
Holistically, I think we just need to start doing more social things together. And I think there needs to be more like congressional retreats and caucuses and things that are, you know, you can't, it's hard to hate someone when you know them. I have found.
There's a couple things that come up in this conversation, though, that I think are really fascinating. One of them is Meghan talks about not only how she makes friends across party lines, but also why she does it. I think her mindset on that is very interesting. She also talks about how dismayed and heartbroken she was to discover that one of her hardcore fans, somebody who was really excited about Meghan McCain, became so radicalized and so disaffected over the course of the Trump years that this person actually was a part of the insurrection in the Capitol and lost her life during the insurrection. And Meghan McCain reflects on that. And then lastly, she also talks about how she thinks Republicans can revive and revitalize the best parts of their party. And whatever party you're in, reviving the best in your party is really key. It's got to be job one, mission number one for everybody. And Meghan's got some pretty neat ideas that I want you to be aware of. You don't have to agree with Meghan McCain. You don't have to agree with me. It's not about disagreement. Disagreement is okay. In a democracy, you're supposed to disagree. That's the whole point of a democracy. Dictatorship, you cannot disagree. Dictatorship, you have to agree. Democracy, you get to disagree. That's called freedom. The problem is when you disagree on everything. If you disagree on everything, you're not going to have a country. You have to be as passionate about finding the points of agreement as the points of disagreement, and that's how you make progress going forward. And I hope you can hear a little bit of hope for progress in my conversation with Meghan McCain when we get back.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
You can power up your playtime with the Nintendo Switch system, the home of Mario and friends. You may discover exciting surprises with Mario, Princess Peach, and more in Super Mario Bros. Wonder, or challenge friends to a race in Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. You can head to Nintendo.com to learn more about the Nintendo Switch system. Games and systems sold separately.
I'm so glad to have you on the podcast. We use your father's voice in every podcast. The introduction for this show has clips from people I admire, like James Baldwin and John Lewis, and also your dad. And look, I just want to have a conversation. You know, we've been in politics for a long time, both of us. We both have some independence from the mainstreams of our party. I just want to talk about what we can do, like how can we start to try to bring folks together. Before we do that, though, I just want to just talk a little bit about your dad. I mean, you've been in a kind of a public process of grieving and honoring. I thought your speech at his funeral was one of the most powerful speeches in this century about politics and about principles. Is it getting any better? Is it getting any easier? Have you been able to integrate it? I mean, where are you in your process with that?
Well, first of all, thank you for saying that about my eulogy. He helped me sort of mold it before he died, which is interesting and something is very unique. Yeah. And the last thing he said to me, when I said, how am I supposed to do this? He said, give them hell, which I think is like a funny thing to say to your daughter before she's going to give your eulogy. It's the thing I'm most proud of ever doing. There's nothing I'll ever do that compares. My grief process is, grief is tricky. It's such a tricky animal. And I know you've experienced grief with the loss of your mother as well. And in the beginning, I was just an absolute feral animal. I was not attached to my emotions. I was so angry. I was so upset. Small things would set me off crying. Small things would set me off like laughing. Small things would make me angry. And my emotions were much more exaggerated. And I think it's because I was just dealing with so much and dealing with it publicly and then working on television, and you know that already you have heightened sort of like just senses in general if you do live television. I thought I was doing really good, and I am. I've made a lot of progress, and I'm always open about the fact that I've had really intense grief counseling. I went on medication. I did everything you should do, at least in my impression. I meditate, took time off. I took bereavement leave before I went back to work, and I'm the waves are much calmer now in the sense that like I don't wake up every day crying and missing him, but the anniversary of his death this year, I was at the beach in North Carolina and I was just like a basket case all day. I was so upset. I thought I'd be fine. And then I almost felt like in that moment, because I hadn't chosen to do anything to honor him, it was almost like the universe or karma being like, you think you're going to get away with ignoring this day? You're not. It's a process.
And, you know, you've had to grieve in public for him. And then also, you know, I think for a certain vision of the conservative movement that he represented and that seems to be in real steep decline now. And you had to do that in public. You were on TV practically every single day on The View. You know, what did you learn on The View as you're looking back on it now? It's a finished chapter. And what did you learn about liberals and progressives? Because you were the only conservative on that show.
I was on The View for 4 years, and it was the most, I hope, the most tumultuous 4 years of my life politically in the country and then personally. Just there's so much that got into those 4 years. Obviously, my dad died of brain cancer. I got married and had a baby. The insurrection happened. Like, it's just so much in a period of time to even process. The View brought out the best in me and the worst in me. And I find that it brings out the best of everyone and the worst of everyone. Like, it's a very intense show for that reason. I couldn't do it anymore. I was mentally, emotionally, and spiritually tapped out. I talk about in my memoir, a lot of it had to do when I came back from maternity leave. And there were like three big markers where I was like, I can't do this anymore. And, you know, you came on The View to do, to promote a documentary we had worked on together about bringing the country together. And it basically turned into, you know, you're my friend. We worked on a project together. And it turned into something that I was very humiliated, that I felt like I had brought my friend on, which I thought was a safe and respectful space. And it was horrible. It's one of the worst things I ever experienced on air. And I've experienced a lot of things on air that aren't amazing. And I felt like it was also adding to what's wrong with media and America. So there's like three big things that happened on The View. Donald Trump Jr. coming on and just screaming at us. And then me being like so emotionally raw and like not being able to handle being in front of Donald Trump Jr. The interview with you. And then an experience I had when I came back after maternity leave with Joy. And I just thought that there's got to be more to life. There's got to be different avenues to bring people together. And I need to also like live in the spirit of my dad. And I'm not doing it here.
You know, it was a big moment for me as well. You know, it was ironic that here we are two well-known, you're well-known conservative, I'm a well-known progressive. I thought, geez, you know, if you and I get together and, you know, add some love and light to a documentary that's talking about people trying, you know, who are that different, trying to find some common ground, that would be a good way to spend an afternoon. And, you know, it didn't turn out that way in terms of, you know, some of your co-hosts deciding to use that as a moment to take me to task for my transgressions of working with conservatives on criminal justice issues, which I worked on for 30 years. And then to watch the social media response where only the takedown was even shown. People never heard my response. They never heard my answer. Now, before we get back to my conversation with Megan, I want you to hear this exchange that we're talking about from The View. So that way you're going to know what we're actually talking about. I'm going to play the full exchange so you can hear what Megan's co-host said to me and what I said back to her. That way you've got the whole context.
Now, Van, you do spend a lot of time, you know, threading the middle and trying to unite people. But there are those who really accuse you of being a political opportunist, a chameleon, so to speak, who provided a racial cover for former disgraced, twice impeached President Trump. You said this, and I quote, "Donald Trump, and I get beat up by liberals every time I say this, but I'm going to keep saying it. He has done good stuff for the black community, opportunity zone stuff, black college stuff. There's a side to Donald Trump that I think he does not get enough credit for." Yet, just recently, you cried on CNN when Joe Biden was elected the 46th president, and you said, it's easier to be a parent now. Character matters now. Truth matters. You even mentioned George Floyd and said a lot of people felt they couldn't breathe. People in the black community don't trust you anymore. What is your response?
I don't think that's true. The entire quote I said was that Trump has done a lot of good stuff he doesn't get credit for. And then I went on to say the reason I didn't get credit for it is because he's done all this horrific stuff, said all this horrific stuff, and it completely erases what he's done. But what happens is social media will take the clip, but they won't show the full context. And so what I will say is this: my entire life has been about bringing people together to solve tough problems for people at the very bottom who don't have anything. I've spent 25 years fighting against the prison system. I have helped to close 5 abusive prisons. And by working with Republicans at the local, state, and federal level, and yes, including the Trump administration, I have helped to pass 18 bipartisan bills. We got 14,000 people out of the federal prison system with the First Step Act and more to come. We got 70,000 human beings who were suffering in jails and prisons under COVID, released under compassionate release, working with Republicans and Democrats. Black Lives Matter, math matters too. 80% of black folks are locked up in states that are run in part or whole by Republicans, red states and purple states. So when you can pass a law, as my team has done, in a Louisiana, in a Georgia, in California, Michigan, red states, blue states, and purple states, to get people home, the people behind bars are not sitting up here worried, saying, get me out of prison, Van, or whatever you do, don't talk to a Republican. They say, get me out of prison. And I am proud of the fact that my team at the Reform Alliance, Dream Corps, and Cut 50 have been able to work with anybody to get folks home. And at a certain point, we got to stop focusing on rhetoric and look at results. People may not like everything I have said on television, but I try to be balanced. But look at what I have done. Who among my critics have been able to get people together to help folks at the bottom? When we fight like this about everything, and you can't give anybody even a little bit of credit for anything, who hurts is not the politicians, it's not the pundits, it's regular folks who don't have anything, people who can't vote because they're in jail. We have to put their interests first. I'm never going to apologize for putting the interests of people at the bottom first. People need champions. Whoever's in that White House, I've got a responsibility to go in there and advocate and try to get people home out of prison. I'm going to keep doing it, whoever's in that White House.
I do recognize, and I have to reflect on it, that there are people who feel differently, and who say, here's an African-American guy with a big platform. What's he doing palling around with Jared Kushner, with Ivanka Trump, with Donald Trump on the issues that I'm committed to? And I think that there are legitimate questions and concerns. I just think they could be handled better in terms of how you bring them to somebody. But again, we're all grown up here.
I have a very serious, deep, intense anger and animosity towards anyone in the Trump family. I 100% support and understand why you worked with the administration, because at the end of the day, the people who are impacted, the people whose lives you got out of jail who are wrongfully incarcerated, there's a method to the madness. They were released. Their lives are changed. I know this shocks people, but I have a lot of friends on the left. My dad's best friend in the entire world is Joe Lieberman, and is. Mm-hmm. And I would literally probably be in a mental institution if it weren't for him and his wife, Hadassah, and their friendship and their love and literal support in every way you can support someone after my dad died. So politics is about connections and friendship and love in a lot of ways too. At least that's always been my experience. And I really am so heartbroken at where the country is at right now. And I don't think it's what people want.
It does bring me to the point, you mentioned Lieberman and we can point to other great examples. And at the same time, somehow the establishment, and I consider myself, relatively independent, but I'm a part of the establishment. I worked for Obama, as you pointed out. I'm on CNN. So I think the establishment, we let the country down in some very profound way, obviously, because look at the reaction. You have in the Democratic Party, we have the Bernie Sanders rebellion that got, tens of millions of votes and is now represented quite well by AOC, who you mentioned, and others. And look at on the Republican side, you have the Trump rebellion, which, actually got all the way to the White House and may get back in there. So what do you think, looking back, what did the establishment get wrong? I mean, something is off kilter and it's not good enough, I think, just for us to criticize the critics. How do we get here?
I think that there's a whole faction of the American population that has been abandoned and neglected and taken for granted and honestly been told a bunch of lies for a really long time. And I really tried to understand Trump when he got elected, and I really tried to understand AOC and Bernie Sanders because, first of all, it's my job. And second of all, I want to understand these factions that are growing and thriving and getting stronger in the country. And I think that You know, you look at the Tea Party movement and people that were just so angry with the spending in Washington, D.C., that they, you know, got together and had this whole wave of people who were elected into Congress. And I think when you go to Appalachia, which I have also been to as well, or you go to like areas of Arizona, which, you know, have in a lot of ways, you know, been overcome by poverty and drugs as well, and meth and things like that, and opioids. You know, people don't have a lot. They don't believe in the American dream anymore. They don't believe that their children are going to have a better future than the generation before. And I think sometimes it's just easier to believe someone who will listen to you and not treat you like you are one of the forgotten of society that has no place or value. And I think with Trump, it happened with, you know, obviously people in the Rust Belt. And I think with people like AOC and Bernie Sanders, it's happening with and this is just generalizing, but, you know, people of color, you know, people who are living in urban, more urban areas statistically, and these policies haven't been working. And instead of thinking, you know, hey, I should go to the right, they think socialism will be the answer. I think the people that are the leaders of these factions are really brilliant orators and really brilliant at presenting their case. I disagree with all of it, and I think all of it's dangerous. Let me put it this way. This is the best way I can explain this. Ashley Babbitt, who was shot at the insurrection in the Capitol. So when she was shot, people sent me, she had tweeted me a bunch of times and actually like written about me, I believe on her blog, but that may be inaccurate. But she was like a Meghan McCain fan, which I am a, you know, center right, like I'm conservative, but I'm, you know, for paid family leave and prison reform. And, you know, I have very nuanced beliefs that, and Trump people hate me. How do you go from being a Meghan McCain fan 2 years ago to thinking there's no other option in your life but to storm the Capitol, that there's nothing else that can save you in America? How does that happen? How are you radicalized in such a short period of time? And I think that her case in particular, she had like a pool cleaning business that went under in California. What happens to a person like this that they're radicalized? And that's what I'm most curious about and most fearful of.
Parenting can bring up many unexpected challenges, and there's so much advice out there, it can be hard to know where to find real help. I'm Janet Lansbury, host of Unruffled, a podcast with answers to the questions that arise when raising children. I've worked with children and parents for over 25 years, and I'm eager to share all that I've learned with you, and most of all, encourage you to trust yourself. In each episode, I address listeners' questions through the lens of my respectful parenting approach. From advice for how to address toddler meltdowns, encourage them to develop their skills naturally and joyfully through self-directed play, for helping when our kids are scared, and so much more. I aim to offer you thoughtful advice that will shift your perspective on challenging topics, making them far less intimidating and overwhelming, and free you of the need for scripts and tricks. We can do this. Follow Unruffled on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen to Unruffled ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
I love a good parasocial relationship with a celebrity who will probably never know my name.
I mean, honestly, who knows? Don't count yourself out. But my favorite part about these feuds is how they're ignited by the tiniest things.
Jada, I love you. G.I. Jane 2, can't wait to see it.
I accidentally laminated my brows too much.
It starts small and then it gets so big.
To be honest, Naomi, I'm fearful of you to this day.
I don't know her.
We all just have to admit, we're addicted. Everybody has opinions. Everyone picks sides.
Leave Britney Spears alone right now.
From Wondery, I'm Sydney Battle.
And I'm Matt Bellassai.
And this is Dis and Tell, where we unpack why we get so invested in these feuds and whether or not our attention only makes the whole thing worse.
Follow Dis and Tell wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I mean, I think the potential for radicalization is really high. And I also feel that it's the hypocrisy of both parties that has created this context. The Republican Party and the Democratic Party have key principles that we've wandered away from. As a Democrat, we're supposed to be the party of the working person, the struggler and the striver who's, you know, trying to rise up in the system. But we've gotten to the point now, if you aren't eating kale and doing yoga, you may not fit in this party. And there's a certain level of coastal elitism that you, if you haven't gone to college, if you don't know all the right words, if you don't know all the right lingo, if you don't have the right kind of lifestyle, if you don't, you know, if you aren't using the right, you know, vegan or organic products, you may just get embarrassed among progressives. You know, there's some, I was talking to some folks who are working at the grassroots level, and they're saying that, you know, at the, you know, Black folks, we often say, hey, king, hey, queen. And, you know, you're trying to get people to come out and vote. You're trying to engage with people. And you have these kids coming off the campus say, oh, well, that's sexist. You can't say that. Well, now you're telling somebody who runs a barbershop or somebody who's been in community for 30 years that they're wrong. And people are getting tired of being told they're wrong. So there's a certain amount of elitism that I think we don't manage very well in terms of the Democratic Party. And the Republican Party, this is the party of Lincoln. It started off as a radical anti-slavery party. It's a party of individual rights and individual dignity. And yet, what the hell is Steve Bannon doing here? You know what I mean? Who's like all about like demonization and groupthink and stuff like that. And so when you know, you have a Republican Party that's so far off the rails that a Steve Bannon feels perfectly comfortable and white nationalists feel perfectly comfortable, and there seems to be no way to challenge them effectively. And now you have two parties that they don't stand for what they're supposed to stand for.
I agree with all of that. And, you know, I think Republicans have played really, have made a deal with the devil that, you know, we can traffic in racism and anti-Semitism and things that are, you know, when I was growing up as, you know, the most horrible, egregious, disgusting things anyone could ever do, any normal, rational person. And I think that they decided to make this deal with Trump and all that comes with him. And we're seeing the ramifications. The ramifications are white college educated women and people of color and, you know, people that make, I believe it's over $100,000 a year. Like the demographics on it, there's a lot of really important demographics that the Republican Party is losing and losing fast. But then you see on the other side with Democrats, like looking like they just, there's such a like outward disdain I see towards people in red states in the middle of the country who make under $100,000 a year and maybe even like less than $50,000 a year or like working on minimum wage. And it's a recipe for evil and disaster, which is why I think we're in the place that we're in. You know, I could never get on board with President Trump. I never voted for him. I actually didn't. I wrote in. I've like just going to write in apparently for forever. And, you know, I feel like I was like a Republican that Democrats were comfortable with for a long time because of my dad and because, you know, I'm not radical on some things. And then as the Trump years went on, I was sort of painted out to be more and more extreme, which I felt like was sometimes fair and sometimes wasn't fair. But I always said in meetings, when you demonize me, you're demonizing a lot of women in the country who agree with me. And if you treat me like I'm stupid and you call me a little girl and you tell me that I need to behave, women see that and they see these signals and they see that you disrespect them and you hold no value, and that will have ramifications. And I think it's interesting even on the show that like I haven't been replaced yet. I have given a list of like five really incredible women that have not tested that I think would be amazing. And there's this weird dance networks are doing right now that aren't Fox where you cannot be any other kind of Republican except basically like a Lincoln Project Republican, because anything other than that is unacceptable. And to me, that's dangerous because you're talking about 50% of the country. And I just think the more we pretend like this doesn't exist, it's going to exist and it's still there. And the more dangerous I think things will get.
Look, I agree with you in that 100%. I think that this idea of sometimes progressives, we wind up feeding what we're fighting without knowing it. Like, for instance, there's a reason that Black people don't, in general, vote for Republicans. It has nothing to do with policy. If we're going to be honest, Black people are very conservative on the whole. I mean, if you think about the African-American community, what our institutions are about, the Black church and hip-hop are our two biggest institutions. People in hip-hop, they're not rapping about staying poor. They're rapping about, you know, private plane Republican stuff, you know what I mean? Traditionally, like, they're wealth, aspiration. I mean, you know, the Black church is, you know, very traditional in terms of what they're saying from the pulpit, even in terms of gender relationships. But those Black preachers will fill up buses of voters and go vote for a party that is opposite of them because it seems like Republicans don't like us. Even if you're African-American, even if you might agree with some of the Republican policies on paper, how you treat me and how you talk about me when I'm watching Fox News, when I'm listening to right-wing radio, when the only time you talk about Black communities is to say something negative. Always the assumption being that our communities are dysfunctional and violent and on welfare, whatever. You'd never talk about the Black kids who are going to, you know, filling up all these Black colleges and doing an amazing, you know, job. And you leave me with the impression that you don't like me. You don't see me, you don't respect me. So even if I agree with your policies, I'm not going to vote for you. Well, similarly on the left, I mean, you can say, well, listen, you know, we've got all these great policies that would help all these working class white folks, you know, whereas family leave or whatever it is. Yeah, but every time we say straight white male, we seem to mean the devil. Every time we say red state voter, we seem to mean somebody who's stupid. So maybe some of the policies would benefit people who vote for Republicans. But people don't just vote on policy. They vote on a sense of their own human dignity. And it's very hard to vote for a party that you feel doesn't respect you.
I think when you see things like Charlottesville and find people on both sides, there are certain moments in history and certain moments culturally that happen that you can't explain, you can't. And I think they have real impact. And I imagine if you are a Black woman with a Black son and you see that, that you're like, no matter what the Republican Party stands for economically, there has to be a baseline thing where you're like, well, I can't vote for a racist. And I don't think Republicans are racist, but I think if you have someone that virtue signals or signals and dog whistles, then I understand. And that's actually something I learned a lot more about working at The View. That's one of the more positive things I learned working there. I really got a really upfront, intense perspective on what it is like for people of color in this country, the experience, because there's just a lot of people of color that work at The View on and off camera. And I would see the pain and visceral emotional reactions to, I remember specifically when President Trump said about Haiti that they were like shithole countries. And there's a makeup artist that works on The View who is Haitian. Mm. And she was just very emotional and very upset. And she ended up wearing a t-shirt that said Haiti on it the next day or the day after. And these things have ramifications.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's, for me, you know, I do think it's important. Listen, let's vote against each other. We don't have to agree on stuff. But we wind up hating each other. And I think we wind up feeding what we're fighting on the left in ways that we aren't even aware of. You know, when we say stuff like these idiots from the red states keep voting against their economic self-interest. Well, hold on a second. You know, the white people who vote against their economic self-interest the most? Rich white liberals that vote for higher taxes. Nobody's calling them stupid. You say, oh, well, they have great values. They believe in their values more than the money. Well, maybe that poor working class white guy has values he values more than money. Maybe that working class white guy says, I value independence and liberty. I don't want you stealing money from rich people and bribing me to be dependent on the government. If my kid makes a mistake, I don't want the government bailing them out. If they're dumb enough to get pregnant and get on drugs, don't bail them out. Make them learn a tough lesson. Those are values that people have. Doesn't mean you're right or wrong, but you got to respect it. You can't come in with the assumption that you know better.
Yeah, I found, you know, just working in media, especially the last 4 years, if you can't find anything redeemable about any Republican and you also don't know any, that was one of my biggest criticisms of many places I've worked, is that you have to have more than one Republican, which is me, on staff. The sins of President Trump are not, you can't hold every Republican responsible for everything he's done because it's not fair. But I felt like at a certain point, it was just more convenient to lump everyone into the Trump category, no matter what happens, because if you don't just reject being a Republican, then you're a racist, horrible psycho.
Right. Well, I want to move to some possible solutions. I don't know if any of them will work, but one of the things is that I do think that within both parties, we need a more intentional effort to stand up for the best in our parties. If you were trying to think through a revival agenda or a revival process for the Republican Party, I mean, how would you begin to think about pulling together the best of the conservatives?
I have found the main issue that I think there is a lot of synergy on the left and the right really is paid family leave and anything having to do with women returning to the workforce after having babies. And I think that for me, it has been very confusing going through what I went through physically and emotionally after I had my daughter, seeing just how shitty America is in the scheme of the globe. Saudi Arabia has a better paid family leave plan than the United States of America is. I started thinking about women working minimum wage jobs, women who aren't getting, you know, get 2 weeks or 4 weeks, something that's just like, you know, cruel and inhumane. And I have found in a lot of spaces right now, conservatives really sort of changing their minds a lot about it, because I think, again, the argument many conservatives have for why America is going to hell is the breakdown of the family. Well, if you're talking about the start of the breakdown of the family, it starts with mothers not having the time to bond and heal with their children. And then I think you can make an argument that everything ricochets from there. So we should all want to support the family and support children and support mothers. As much as I don't like Ivanka Trump, I know that was a big issue for her as well. So if there's an issue that, like, you, me, Ivanka Trump, and Bernie Sanders agree on, like, why won't we get this done? And then holistically, I think we just need to start doing more social things together. And I think there needs to be more, like, congressional retreats and caucuses and things that are, you know, you can't, it's hard to hate someone when you know them, I have found.
Yeah, I've never met a single person I can't find one thing in common with. And I've never met a single person I can't find one thing I like about them. You know, let me just throw out some issues, just a few, and then we'll wrap up. But I wonder, you are one of the few conservatives that, you know, you really had to deal with the liberal causes up front every day. You're probably as well-versed in some of the progressive view of progressive ideas as most progressives are. You know, on an issue like climate, for instance, do you see any common ground? Is there any slice or sliver?
I always say that if climate change, if people just started talking to Republicans about conservation and just said that instead of climate change, like, some of it is just language, because I obviously believe in climate change. I don't think that it is, you know, I don't think we're in Armageddon and I'm going to die tomorrow from, like, a, you know, tidal wave. But I think when you start talking, at least for me, to Republicans about wanting the Yellowstone National Park to continue to thrive, talking about how Lake Powell's lake is really depleted right now. Like, you can literally see, like, markers. I used to, when my summers growing up, we used to vacation there on houseboats and jet skis. It's very fun. But the lake is, like, not going to exist soon if things continue on the path that they are. The Grand Canyon, you see many issues happening with, you know, the Colorado River and different kinds of birds and plants and animals in the Grand Canyon. I think if you just talk about conservation and like Teddy Roosevelt conservation instead of climate change, you get way further with people on the right.
What about abortion? What about gun rights, gun safety? I mean, just anything at all, because people got to talk about this stuff, and we're just obviously doing such a bad job of it.
I think with gun rights, people need to understand, at least on the left, that the Second Amendment's not going anywhere. And for many people that grow up in, like, gun culture, it's a really big part of their life. When I was in high school, the guy who I carpooled me, who picked me up to carpool, had a shotgun and a rack in the back of his car. It was not unusual. It was not weird. I think starting with background checks, any reasonable, rational person, the last person I ever want is for a crazy person to have access to a weapon. I didn't have a problem with closing the gun show loopholes either. Again, I think if you're a reasonable person and you want to buy a whatever Smith & Wesson rifle or whatever, I don't think that normal people, at least in my life, have a problem with waiting an extra day or two to make sure that a psycho lunatic doesn't shoot up a school. I never have a problem talking about gun rights and the Second Amendment with people, as long as they're not hysterical on either side.
What about abortion? That one's tough.
That one is tougher. You know, in the same way that I think shout your abortion is gross, I also think that shaming people for having abortions is gross as well. I would just implore more respect all the way around. I don't try and convince people, and I don't want to be convinced on that issue, but I just want to have more respectful dialogue. I just like tolerance and respect on both sides. That may sound saccharine, but.
Well, look, I mean, civility is key to civilization. So I just think that it's when we disagree and passionately disagree that the passion needs to be there, but we also need to have the civility of the container. We have to, on these really tough issues, we have to remind each other. And that's why it's your dad's quote, that the association of being Americans is the most important association. You have to hang on to the common ground, especially when you have these kind of battleground issues. You know, this stuff really matters, like how we deal with difference, how we deal with disagreement. It's not the disagreement, it's the disrespect. I don't mind disagreement. I do mind disrespect.
I have had this experience in my life where I have prejudged people on their politics beforehand and been cruel and very, you know, I don't know, like tough in my analysis of them. And had some of the, there's one person in particular who has turned out to be like crazily one of my closest friends and the biggest source of support. You know who she is. She won't mind. Tulsi Gabbard, who I remember saying something really nasty about her on The View and getting a lot of different people saying, you need to meet her because you don't understand her perspective. She has this like aloha peace perspective on the world. And I ended up, she asked me to go to lunch after she came on The View, and I went to lunch with her, and we ended up having so much in common. Like, and no one would believe that because she's like Miss Aloha, no makeup. Like, I want everything like peace and love and very like, you know, non-interventionist, isolationist, whatever. And literally, like, I don't know if I would have survived COVID without her friendship. Like, she has become such a source of support and love. And we're both so controversial, and having this person in the world that bonds over being a controversial woman. And I would never have had that if I only would have people in my life that I agree with. Her friendship is so much more important to me than politics.
That's the thing. It's like, you have to, I think, you know, having a good neighbor, you don't have to agree with them, but you need to understand where they're coming from. If you disagree with somebody, but you understand where they're coming from, you can still have a neighborhood. If you disagree with somebody and you don't even understand where the hell they're coming from, it, you know, becomes very, very challenging.
I totally agree. I think the vast majority of normal Americans agree. I think it's easier to get in like media spin cycles because you get more clicks and you get more attention and all the things that I think are destroying the country. But my life would be a very sad, joyless place if the only people I loved and let into my life and like socialized with and, you know, shared communities with and worshiped with were people I agreed with politically. And that's how I choose to live my life. And that's how I want my child to live her life.
Well, I am a beneficiary of that approach because I get to be your friend and we don't have to agree on much. But I think we admire each other and respect each other. And we find ways to help each other personally. You know, I'm having a bad day. You're having a bad day. We're there for each other. And more of that needs to happen. But as a beneficiary of your policy, I approve it. And let's just stay together. I hope to have you back soon. And I just appreciate everything that you stand for, and much love to your family. Appreciate you.
Bye.
Bye.
We see the beauty of hope. That spirit is so beautiful.
Those who become American citizens love this country even more. And that's why the Statue of Liberty lifts her lamp to welcome them to the Golden Door.
Man, I like talking to Meghan McCain. I just think that she's one of these rare people in American life and American politics that, you know, she's just so relatable. She can talk about her family or kids or, you know, everything that's going on. She also has a, I think, very penetrating view of where we are. I think a couple of things. One, no matter who you are, it is very easy now to underestimate how big the community is of people who don't agree with you, who don't see it the same way. If you're a Republican and you are consuming a lot of conservative media, a lot of conservative podcasts, first of all, thank you for adding this one to your overall diet. Hopefully it'll give you something you aren't getting elsewhere. But you might just think that all the progressives are crazy, but you also might think there's very few of us. And same, I think, for those of us who might be progressive. It's a very, very large country. And there are a huge number of people who are living completely different lives in terms of what they do every day, what they read, watch, and listen to, how they were raised, how they pray, and how they vote. And those people are incredibly valuable to the country. They are incredibly wise about some things. They see some stuff that we don't see every day. And they're as scared of you as you are of them. That's the thing I don't think people understand. Is that whatever side of this fight you're on, the people you're fighting are as afraid of you as you are of them. If you are a progressive, you will look at what the Republicans are doing and say, look, they've got all this power, disproportionate power, perhaps. They've got so much representation in the Senate. We barely can beat them as Democrats in the presidential election because of the Electoral College. They have a massive advantage now in the Supreme Court. They have a bunch of governorships. You start to look at this incredible power block in politics of the Republicans. And you think, what are they going to do? I'm scared of these people. And you see them moving on voting rights in a way that's alarming and other stuff, and you're just terrified. And if you're a progressive, you may not believe that that super powerful group is also terrified of you. Because if you're on the conservative side, you say, sure, we might have some political power, but look at Hollywood and how almost every film now, how almost everything on television has a progressive point of view. We don't have a voice in that. Look at the campuses, look at the academy, even Silicon Valley, you know, that deplatformed a sitting Republican president, Donald Trump, in an unprecedented way. And he still can't get back on Twitter. You know, look at the changing demographics of the country. And so they feel that we progressives have a lot of power. And, you know, between Black Lives Matter, these other groups, that they're the ones that are being pushed. They're the ones that are being challenged. They're the ones that are being disrespected. They're the ones that are being misunderstood. And I think the important thing to remember is you have a double standoff now where both sides feel abused. Both sides can point to the other side's power. Both sides can fear the other side's power, and neither side has to listen. And that's what we're trying to correct with this podcast. And that's why my friendships that I have with people who are conservatives, whether you're talking about a Meghan McCain or an Ivanka Trump, who, by the way, they don't even get along with each other, which I didn't fully take on board. But I get along with both of them and a bunch of other people. I do that because I don't want to become what I'm fighting. I don't want to become the intolerant perspective that I'm fighting. I don't want to become the arrogant, dismissive, callous force that I'm fighting. And the only way I cannot become what I'm fighting is to reach out even when it's hard. The only way I cannot become what I'm fighting and not feed what I'm fighting is to reach out even when it's hard, especially when it's hard. Meghan McCain has a similar approach. And I think probably many of you see the appeal of that and maybe even practicing that in your own lives, or you used to. I think it's time for us to try to get back to that. We don't have to agree on everything, but I do believe that we're all better off when you can still make the phone call. That's my thing. Can you still make the phone call? Maybe you got some strained relationships in your family. Maybe you've got some strained relationships at work. But can you at least make the call when it matters? That's what we're starting to lose. We're starting to get to a place where even in emergencies, like, I don't know, a pandemic, we may not even have enough left in the tank, enough goodwill, enough understanding to make the phone call. Let's start working on restoring that in this country. And I'm very, very glad that with Meghan McCain, I can always make the call. This is Van Jones. Thank you for spending time with us on Uncommon Ground. See you next time. Uncommon Ground with Van Jones is an Amazon original production. It's produced by Magic Labs Media and Wonder Media Network. Our producers are Teddy Alexander, Maisha Dyson, Grace Lynch, Sundus Hassan, and Adesawa Agbonile. Our managing producers are Lauren D. and Eliza Mills. Our executive producers are Jenny Kaplan and Morgan Jones. Our theme music was composed by The Grand Mess. Publicity for the show is led by Alice Zoe, Andy Lichtenfeld, Didier Moraes, and Chantel Muentes. Special thanks to Jana Carter, Taylor Williamson, Seven McDonald, Drew Schwindeman, Eric Carter, Trevor McNeil, Carrie McCarran, Joe McMillan, Steph Walkneen, Vanessa Rebert, Ty Jacobson, Marshall Leewy, and Chris Jackman.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Uncommon Ground with Van Jones ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Once upon a beat! Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me, DJ Fuse, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the new kids and family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.